Welcome in to the Locked On Nets podcast. On today's show, Josh and I discuss the end of the Brett Yormark era. We talk about Joe Harris being on the brink of making Team USA's final roster, and we give some honorable mentions for our favorite moments of last season. Coming up.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, recording here on a Monday night. It's late. Marcus had improv class, always good. He's very sharp on his feet and witty. But before we pull back the curtain anymore, my name is Josh Bass. I am your tried and true host, a lifelong fan of the Brooklyn Nets. And the aforementioned Marcus Barahal is my sidekick. Or maybe I'm his sidekick, joining me every step of the way. Marcus, what's going on, man?
Not much. I think I'm probably your we're sidekick,
equal.
I would say.
No, we're equal. We're equal.
Okay, I'll take that.
It's you. You do more of the work on this thing.
No, you're the leader. You're the host.
It's unfortunate, but the host is actually sometimes the one that's just a front and really is less confident than the people that are actually doing the real work.
You're saying you're like a puppet?
You're the puppet.
No puppet.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah, you're in the shadows, just like controlling me like I'm Pinocchio.
Just have you on my strings, Josh.
Yeah, no, it's a very disturbing image, but I have to really reevaluate some things after this podcast.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of things to talk about. I heard that you saw a movie, just to completely change the topic a little bit.
On the spot. Damn. Yeah, I did see a movie. I saw Good Boys with two friends of the show, Epstein and Scott. We went to my local theater in Kips Bay. And I have to say, we were talking a bunch how there hasn't been, I don't know if we talked about this on the podcast. Everything kind of blends together. My real life conversations and my podcast conversations. But the fact that there hasn't been a transcendent comedy pretty much in the last 10 years since that kind of hangover Step Brothers era. Is this take familiar to you?
In general, yeah, I don't know if I've heard it from you, but I feel like I've heard that general idea.
No transcendent comedy up until Good Boys.
Wow.
It was amazing. I loved it. I'm so excited. I'm not, obviously, I would never go to see it a second time.
Why wouldn't you go to see it a second time?
Because I'm not spending money on the same thing, but I'm
you
so
just
excited
said you loved it.
So I travel a lot for work, peeking behind the curtain again, and I'm so excited for Delta to have it on their flights so I can just watch it all the time. It was amazing.
Wow. So you wouldn't even see, I know a friend of the show, Gavin, really wanted to see it, and I don't think he has yet. So you wouldn't want to see it again with him?
Definitely not with Gavin, because if people don't know this, because no one listening, I don't think, has seen a movie with Gavin, except maybe if one of our friends is listening.
Shout out to Tonus.
Yeah, but Gavin is horrible to go to a movie with because he does not stop talking, and he's so loud. He has no volume control whatsoever, as many of you listeners know, because his audio was always terrible.
Yeah, and as someone who has been to movies with Gavin, I think the key to a movie with him is you have to go to one that you like don't totally care about. So like I went and saw Jersey Boys, the movie, with him.
Oh my god.
And he was just doing bits the whole time, which was great because I wasn't like super interested in that movie.
You don't
and
care about Frankie great... Valli?
I tuned in and out. You know, I wasn't like obsessed with the plot or anything. But so that was one where I enjoyed having it. But there's some, if you're like as big of a Good Boys fan as you say you are, you probably wouldn't want to see it with him. You want to just take in all the moments.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. But yeah, he's not someone that I'd want to see a movie with. He's just he's a lot. But anyway, Good Boys, incredible. This kid that played the character Thor, I'm looking up his name now, Brady Noon. This guy was magical. He's an incredible comic actor. How old is this dude even? He's 13, but this guy's amazing.
He's 13?
Yeah, I've been quoting him all weekend. It's hilarious.
Who does he play in the movie?
Thor.
Like the
his name is Thor.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's great.
Oh my god.
10,000 followers on Insta.
Sheesh.
You're gonna make 10,001.
Sounds like a great movie, Josh.
It was amazing. I can't recommend it enough. Everyone out there, go see Good Boys. Very, very good stuff. And I really think I'm very excited to get your opinion on it once you see it. I think that you'll agree about it ticking the box on a transcendent comedy. But on to Nets news. But first, Will, want to tell you that today's show is brought to you by Locked On Fantasy Football. Fantasy football players, make sure you listen to our boy Vinny Iyer in Locked On Fantasy Football. Vinny gives you the edge with over 20 years covering the game. Don't listen to the same stuff as everyone else. We're all just cycling through the same content, have the same sleepers, same busts. Get the edge from Vinny that will put you ahead on draft day and all season long. Locked On Fantasy Football on your favorite podcast provider, the Locked On Network. Vinny Iyer, the man, the myth, the legend, the Vinny. So, Marcus, in other Nets news, obviously, we had the big announcement that Joe Tsai was going to fully buy the Nets and also the Barclays Center from Mikhail Prokhorov a couple years early than the timeline had suggested that he would become the full owner. But in other news, the CEO of Brooklyn's Barclays Sports Entertainment, or is it Brooklyn Sports Entertainment? I always confuse myself on that. But Brett Yormark, who is probably one of the few people in the industry that I'd say for his position is that well known, but he caused a lot of waves in his tenure as Nets as CEO. Yormark is out as CEO of Brooklyn Sports Entertainment. I'm curious because I feel like I have very, very mixed feelings towards him, and maybe not even mixed, mainly just negative, as someone who is so close in the team. But for someone who is more outsider like yourself, did you know about Yormark? What was your kind of perception of him? Because I think amongst Nets fans, he has a very bad reputation.
Yeah, I mean, I hadn't, like, when you said the name to me initially, I did not know who that was. But once I looked him up and was, like, reading all the stories and stuff, I was like, oh, this is like that same guy. I didn't realize he was the guy who had that idea of like having the like rival team's jersey on the other side of the jersey. And he had he guided the whole move to Brooklyn. There was like some good and some bad, it seemed like, from his time. And he was with the team for a super long time. 14 years is like an eternity in the NBA. So definitely, I think, a mixed bag. But from the outside, I wouldn't say that he was a name that I like knew, but I think once I was like reading stuff, I was more aware of like the things he did rather than like assigning them to a specific person. I think to me, it was just like, this is the Nets. And I think it more was associated with Prokhorov, I would say, because he was the guy at the top.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, I think that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Yormark was definitely very controversial. The thing you pointed to about selling the reversible jerseys, one side with a Nets player and the other side. This was kind of in that 2010, 2011 era. There was Kobe, there was Dwayne Wade, LeBron. And I was at games where they were selling those jerseys. And frankly, it was just completely embarrassing and disheartening. And I think Yormark, his nickname is Your Market. He cared only about marketing, just sales, did not care about the product on the court whatsoever. And I think obviously his job is to generate revenue. But there's a way to do it without embarrassing the fans and the team itself. And I think he really struggled to maintain that line. Obviously tied in very closely with Prokhorov, even though he was with the team in the Ratner days, Prokhorov and him were, Prokhorov gave a lot of credit to him in terms of getting that move set up. And also a lot of the branding behind the Nets once they moved to Brooklyn. But ultimately he was someone that kind of got in the way of what they were trying to do on a basketball operations front. I really felt like that. Unfortunately for the Nets, once they kind of righted the ship a bit and brought in really credible people like Sean Marks, Yormark did take, I think, some of a backseat. And it wasn't, especially once you have a better team, the attention is going to be on him and his marketing ploys that he's doing. But I think he left the Nets in a better state than when he got there. But it really wasn't anything to do with him. He was someone that was just always trying to make a buck, do anything to generate revenue, regardless of kind of what the perception was going to be. And I think it left a really bad taste in my mouth, especially when it coincided with a lot of the dark days of the Nets. So happy to see him gone, frankly. who knows who their replacement's going to be. I know that David Levy from Turner Sports has been floated around. I don't really have too much of an opinion on any of these guys, but I think you take someone off the street, they're probably going to be better than your mark and represent the franchise in a better way.
Yeah, I saw Woj tweeted about Levy, like you mentioned. So I guess he's in the running. I'm not totally sure who else is, but yeah, I think the goal with someone in that position, I think, is to like not know who they are is kind of the thing. Like I couldn't tell you a single like other CEO, and I think that kind of is the goal. Like those are guys who are supposed to kind of do things on the business side, and like people in that world probably know of them. But like to a casual fan or to even a hardcore fan, like, it's not a position where you're like, oh yeah, that's our CEO. Like, I think that they just kind of do their job and other people do the thing that people care about or fans care about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a good point. And also another thing with Yormark is that his brother, Michael Yormark, is actually the president of Roc Nation.
Yeah, they're twins, right?
I believe so. I believe they're twins.
Interesting. So there's a Lopez connection there. So sort of.
That's why he loved the Lopez brothers. Yeah, and that's obviously, I mean, with everything going on with Roc Nation, Kyrie affiliating with them this year, obviously all the connections that KD has with them, it's definitely, I think when all that happened with those guys coming to the Nets and everyone made connections with Roc Nation and the Nets because of the Yormark brothers, I always thought that was a bit overblown. I don't think that those guys are really going to have the infinite sway with really the creme de la creme of the NBA. I don't think anyone's going to be like, oh, we need to get I need to get on Brett Yormark's team because his brother's Michael Yormark, who's at Roc Nation. I think it was more so just a coincidence, and I think it's proved by having Brett Yormark exit before either KD or Kyrie even stepped foot on the court for the Nets.
Definitely, and I think that even like you have a guy like Sean Marks saying like he didn't talk to those guys or KD specifically like before he made his announcement. Like I think that was completely on the players making that decision.
Yeah, absolutely. It has to be when it's that kind of big decision. But anyway, that's it for the Yormark era. Happy trails. Won't really miss you, Brett, but hope you find much success in your next career. Very happy it is not with the Nets. Trying to be as diplomatic about this as possible. We'll take a quick break, and then coming up, we will talk Joe Harris and his odds of making Team USA coming up. Today's podcast is brought to you by Locked On NFL. The new Locked On NFL is on fire, Marcus. Last week, it was one of the most listened to NFL shows out there with the expert analysis of former NFL scout Matt Williamson. And hosted by Brian Peacock, Locked On NFL is your daily national podcast on all things NFL. Matt's unique takes on the game, Brian's incredible hosting and gregarious nature. It has it all. Follow Locked On NFL now on your podcast provider, Locked On Podcasts. Marcus, Joe Harris is still in the mix for Team USA. Can you believe it? And give the breakdown on what's happening there.
Yeah, I kind of can believe it, actually, because I think you and I both agree that Joe Harris's skill set is certainly very valuable, and he's like a very smart player. And I think that with the team that they're planning to bring to Australia and like beyond, it's like a lot of young guys and a lot of guys who don't have a ton of experience. And I think while Joe Harris is also very young and also doesn't have a ton of experience, I think his basketball IQ is something that the team could definitely use. And obviously his shooting, especially like with internationals, I think would be a big factor. So I'm not super surprised he's made it this far, especially with more guys dropping out, like De'Aaron Fox just dropped out, which brought the total pool of players that are like still in the running to make the team to 13. And there's only 12 guys who are going to make it. So only one more guy is going to get cut. So basically, as long as Joe Harris isn't the worst guy on a roster that includes guys like Mason Plumlee, Marcus Smart, Derek White, Kyle Kuzma, as long as he's better than one of those people, he will make the team.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. I think the way Harris plays is definitely something that I think Pop will respect a lot. Unfortunately, the way the roster's shaping up, obviously Derek White being a Spur, Plumlee, even though he's probably the worst player by far, they just need him because he's 7 feet tall and can jump a little bit. So I think that Harris, he's probably the odds-on favorite to get cut still. But he's not, it's not likely. I think he probably has a plurality of the share to get cut. But
Still a good chance he makes the team, and you never know how things will break. Obviously, De'Aaron Fox just dropping out, very surprising. So there could be another big dropout, and then all of a sudden it's 12 people for 12 spots, and then guess what? You can't cut Joe Harris.
Yeah, I was super surprised, honestly, that De'Aaron Fox dropped out. I thought him and Donovan Mitchell were kind of going to be the two guys. Obviously, Kemba Walker's there too, but the two guys who are like kind of leading this team. So that was interesting. But I think Joe Harris should make the team, and I think he will. I think that from what I've been reading, it's kind of Derek White has been talked about. I know he is on the Spurs, but at the same time, he's like even Mason Plumlee, like he's nowhere near as proven as these guys. So I think he's a guy who could be on the chopping block. I've heard his name. I've heard, I think Smart had like an injury. So I think it is possible that someone drops out for that reason. But yeah, like you said, I think Plumlee actually will make it just because other than Miles Turner and Brook Lopez, he's kind of like the only big guy that they have. And they don't really have anyone who can play the four. Like, I guess you could slide Kuzma and Tatum there, but they don't have a ton of size. So I think Plumlee probably will make it, as surprising as that is.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I don't know. I think I'm not one to get super worked up over this Team USA thing, especially when the roster is like a complete shell of what it would be under normal circumstances. But it is pretty cool to see a net be either make the roster or come last cut to making the roster. And I think it's also, I talked about this on Locked On NBA yesterday with Josh Lloyd. Everyone go give it a listen and subscribe. But besides that shameless plug, I talked about how, listen, you have KD and Kyrie, and everyone's going to be talking about that. But the Nets supporting cast is still one of the best in the NBA. And, you know, Joe Harris is a perfect role player, one of the best three-point shooters in the league, one of the smartest offensive players in the league. And then you have guys like LeVert, Dinwiddie, Jarrett Allen, Kurucs. They have a great supporting cast. And I think this is just an accomplishment, another notch in the belt, if you will, of Kenny Atkinson and Sean Marks. Mark's identifying the talent in multiple players, and then Kenny really coaching them up into becoming productive NBA players and really good role players and starters.
Yeah, and this just continues like a very good year for Joe Harris. He won the three-point contest, not to spoil one of my favorite moments from the season. Hint, hint. A little spoiler there. Even though I said not to spoil, it was a literal spoiler. That will be one of my moments, but yeah, I think that he's done really well for himself. And like you said, Kenny's just done a really good job of developing guys and kind of taking cast-offs from other teams and making them into either role players or starters in some cases. But like guys like Dinwiddie and Joe Harris, I think, are who the Nets are like at their core.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. And I think you're going to need those stars like KD and Kyrie when you want to really vault into the upper echelons of the league. But you build your identity by really getting those role players and how you have your player development culture and your development staff in place. And the Nets have certainly done that. So it's great to see Joe Harris. It has been the year of Joe Harris. 3-point contest win, a couple of great podcast appearances. The guy has really done it all. But as Marcus teased, we're going to be getting into our top and I guess most compelling moments of the season, both best and worst. We'll probably really do a whole big thing on it next podcast, but we wanted to give you guys just a little taste, a sneak peek of two. I think we each have two honorable mentions on best moments from this last season. Hopefully the Nets completely top all these moments this coming season, but still we have a lot of fond memories to look back on from last season. So, Marcus, what is your first honorable mention?
My first one, this might be maybe a surprise to some because I think it was like it was a really good game and it came close to making my top five. But D'Angelo Russell putting up 40 against the Hornets, I thought that was just incredible. It was, I believe, on his birthday, actually, his 23rd birthday. And he just kind of erupted down the stretch and hit like a huge shot at the buzzer. And this was kind of like, it was like right after the All-Star break, I think. And so it was like part of this big crowning moment for him where he was finally taking control of the team. You know, like I think fans wanted it for so long, the last year or so after he got traded, he was like the only blue chip prospect on the team. And just seeing him like fully realize that potential and make the all-star team and start hitting game-winning shots, going on these incredible scoring runs, I think was just like everything Nets fans wanted. And it is going to be sad to see him in another uniform next year, but I think that the culture that he like certainly helped build in Brooklyn is one that's still going to be there.
Yeah, no, that was a great game, and something that I didn't have on my list. Of course, I have a couple other D'Angelo Russell moments, but not that one. That was a great game. The Nets were down by a handful of points in the fourth quarter, and he really just caught fire. I think dropped 12 in a row or something, maybe 10 in a row, 12. To get the win on his birthday. I love when guys go off on their birthday. That's great. But yeah, that was a really special moment. I think solidified D'Lo right after the All-Star break as someone that was definitely deserving of his spot.
Yeah. What's your honorable mention here, Josh? What do we got?
Yeah. So my honorable mention, this was really exciting for me. Early season, definitely early season. The Nets had just lost to this team on opening night, a hard fought game. They come back a week later, they're down, and Spencer Dinwiddie carries them to victory with some huge shots late against his former team. Of course, I'm talking about the game against Detroit Pistons. Dinwiddie, of course, hits the buzzer beater over Andre Drummond. He hit the step back three, kind of his signature shot. It just got me so hyped up and showed really nice resiliency by the Nets to beat Detroit, who they had just lost to, a team that coming into the season was definitely thought to have more talent than them, given the combination of Blake Griffin and Andre Drummond, and was a really nice victory for them against what people thought was going to be a solid team in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, that was actually my other honorable mention also. That sidestep from the corner was like an incredible shot. Yeah. we did not compare a list before this, but yeah, that was an incredible game. Dinwiddie, we've both said it, I think he's like our favorite guy on the team. So obviously seeing him go off, and the revenge factor is huge. Like seeing him against the Pistons or the Bulls, or like when D'Lo was here, anytime they played the Lakers. I mean, it's just like, you must watch it.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel bad that I stole your
other one. No, it's okay.
I'm sorry. You can tell me if I'm being a bad guy.
No, you're being a good guy, maybe even a Kyle guy. Shout out to Mark Titus.
I love being a Kyle guy. So anyway, I guess we'll make sure you go first when we do our actual top five. But my other honorable mention, it's a Caris LeVert shot before his big injury. The buzzer beater he had against what was a top-notch Denver Nuggets team. It wasn't pretty. It was an awkward shot. He kind of crossed someone up from 40 feet away and then drove in. He could have definitely gotten a foul call, but he adjusted midair, threw up a wild floater, and it went in. These are the plays that the Nets never got, you know. Their late game execution has been terrible for years, whether it be 5-second violations, sloppy turnovers, the works, just terrible air balls. LeVert, it wasn't pretty, but he got to go down. And I think this was one of the plays early on in the season that really vaulted him into the spotlight. Obviously, the gruesome injury that happened, but you know, this is one of definitely his highlights from what was overall a breakout season and beating a top team in the Western Conference. The Nets hadn't been accustomed to getting wins like this. So this was a sign early on in the season that I think a lot of people took as very encouraging, and that this team, if everything broke right, could have made a playoff berth, which is what ended up happening.
Yeah, and it's funny that you mentioned that, because both of the games against the Nuggets last year were crazy entertaining. They had that other game in February that was 135-130. That was like that crazy barn burner. But yeah, they like withstood Nikola Jokic in both of those games, which was interesting because they tended to struggle against that type of player. And he did, like, he had 37 and 21 in that game, but to be able to take that punch and still like get the win on that crazy LeVert shot really I think spoke to the resiliency of the team.
Yeah, no, it's great. I think another thing that I really like, you know, we did four honorable mentions, three of them ended up, or three different ones, another that was the same, but three different Nets: D'Lo, LeVert, and Dinwiddie. So good sign that it wasn't just one guy dominating. I think we'll have some repeats when we get into our top five best moments next podcast, but that's going to have to wait. This will do it for today's edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. Please subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. Rate, review, tell us how you're feeling. Tell us how you're feeling. Tell us if you agree with me on Good Boys. we'll wait for Marcus to see it, and then we'll compare notes on it. I think that he's going to be in agreement with me, or I'd be very disappointed if he wasn't. But please follow us on Twitter as well. I am at @JMBass_. Marcus is at Marcus Barahal, and the podcast is at Locked On Nets. Check out the podcast I did with Josh Lloyd of Locked On NBA, all of our other friends on the Locked On Podcast Network. And until next time, be well.
Bye.